chapter Shin Yud Zayin, 317. And, you know, one of the requirements for the Esreg and the four species, the Torah says, Ulekachtem lochem. It had to be yours. That's why also when we have like a person that you give him shaking your lulav, it's best, as the tradition in Chabad, it's best to say, it's a matona amanas lahachzir. It's a gift so that you give it back to me. But it should, you want the person to own the lulav at the time that he's using it for the mitzvah, because that's what it says, ulekachtem lochem. So here they had an issue in Australia. So what was the question? Because the government did not allow for them to import any fruits from outside of the country. However, so what happened? There was one of the workers over there. If it didn't have a special certificate from the health department, they wouldn't allow it in. But there was one of the workers over there, he didn't care. And he would say, okay, you can have it for the Yom Tov, have the Esrog, but bring it back after the Yom Tov, and he burnt it then, after Yom Tov. So he would give them a break. And this is what the people used to do for many years. The guy used to let them take it, and they give it back to him after Yom Tov, so that's the way they fulfilled the mitzvah. What was he worried about? He was worried about, so it means that strictly from the government's rule, you're not allowed to eat the fruit. It doesn't have a certificate. They don't allow you to eat the fruit.
You gave it back after.
Yes, but during the time that you have the fruit, that you have the esrog, and then later on, you're not allowed to really have it during the time that they're doing the esrog. You're not allowed to really have it. The esrog would be prohibited to be eaten, and you have to actually destroy it after the holiday. You have to get rid of it, and it's only that this the one in charge, the officer in charge, is going beyond the letter of the law. So then the issue becomes something which is not, like, there's a concept in halacha, something which is there to be burnt, even before it's burnt, it's considered, it doesn't have any value. It really is not considered any value, and you're not allowed to eat it. So that esrog, technically,
doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist, and an esrog has to be yours, that you should be able to eat it if you wanted to. And here, it turns out it's not literally you. How are we fulfilling the mitzvah? And the Rebbe says no. The Rebbe explains. The Rebbe says he doesn't have the time to get involved. The Rebbe is going to give just two of the reasons why this is not really a problem. Because in this case, there is nothing wrong with the etrog. Let's say, for example, an etrog which grew in a prohibited way. Let's say it's kilayim, it's orla. Let's say it's a non-usable. So over there is an inherent problem with that esrog. Over here, the esrog is okay. The problem is the place. In Australia, at that time, they don't let you eat it. So that does not really render that esrog as a non-existent, because later on you're going to have to, because there's nothing in the esrog itself. The Rebbe gives an example. You know, if you use an esrog in the Beit HaMikdash, you weren't allowed to eat in the Beit HaMikdash. It's a holy place, you're not allowed to eat there. Are we going to say that you're not allowed to, you can't fulfill your mitzvah of the esrog in the Beit HaMikdash because you can't eat it over there? But we find in the Mishnah very clearly that they would make a bracha on the esrog and the lulav also in the Beis HaMikdash. I actually quoted the Gemara and the Mishnah. They threw all the esrogim on the tzeduki who didn't pour the water. He put it on his feet instead of pouring it into the proper place for the Simcha Beis HaSheva. So therefore, The reason is because the esrog is not prohibited to be eaten. But what it is that in the Beis HaMikdash, you're not allowed to eat non-consecrated items. You're not allowed to eat it. So the Rebbe says, same thing as in our case, that the esrog does not have to be burnt. There's no inherent problem. It's the problem that in Australia, in the country, you're not allowed to hold fruit from outside of Eretz Yisrael without a certificate. But it's not an inherent. So therefore, that doesn't render it valueless.
So why didn't they get a certificate?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. Maybe it was hard or difficult. There was a whole process. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly. But apparently that wasn't an easy option anyways. Number two, the Rebbe says it's also very clearly that, so first of all, it technically could be eaten. There's no problem. Then the other problem is, they said, when it's really valueless.
But you don't want to eat it.
Yeah, no, but it has to potentially be eaten. To be able to eat. But, so the eating problem is not really a problem, because the Rebbe said there is no problem eating the esrog. It's only the place that they don't let you eat it, but the esrog is not also. But the other issue was that it doesn't have any value, because you know it's going to be burnt. I mean, it's not. So what value? The Rebbe says no. There is, for many things it has value. So let's say the Rebbe says, if the person who owns the esrog wants to leave Australia now. So for sure, they're not going to object to take the esrog with him. They don't want you to have the esrog in Australia, but they don't care if you take that esrog. You're still the owner, and you can take that esrog out of the country. And the same thing is, the Rebbe says, you can also say as far as this permitting to eat it. Let's say that as soon as you bring the esrog into the country, the person wants to destroy it. He wants to eat up the fruit, let's say a prohibited fruit. He wants to eat it right away. So it would seem for sure they're going to let him eat it. He wants to eat it right there. He's not bringing it in. So if he accepts responsibility for his health, you know. So the Rebbe argues basically that there is ways of eating it. So therefore, it's not a problem to use the esrog for the mitzvah. Thinking, well, this is something which a lot of people do when they purchase the esrog. People buy it and then they pay, you know, after sukkah. So it turns out that it's not, you didn't pay for your esrog. Huh? You don't really maybe own it fully, because you bought the esrog, but you didn't pay the person. But the Rebbe says like this, this was also the tradition from my father-in-law. The esrogim for the Rebbe was brought by Rebbe Yisrael Jacobson. And only after a while, after Sukkot, so Rebbe Yisrael would give the Rebbe a report about these esrogim, and then the Rebbe would pay him for the esrogim. So the Rebbe says, the first year I came to the United States, I asked the Rebbe that they should pay Rebbe Yisrael before Sukkot. The Rebbe said, "We'll pay him before Sukkot, in order that it should be fully shalachem, should be ours, should be yours fully." And the Rebbe did not agree. They didn't agree. It doesn't matter. They didn't agree.
Well, he must have a reason.
However, the Rebbe himself would pay before Sukkot. Would pay for his esrog. That's what they bring down over here in their notes. As soon as they brought him, that those who brought him the four species should tell the price, and he would pay them immediately for the Luvan Esrog. So it's not necessarily, but you know, I guess it doesn't hurt if you. But especially if usually the merchant needs to pay his suppliers also, so mm-hmm. It's not like. If he doesn't get paid, then he can't pay suppliers. So it's all on loan, you know, that